From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the leadership fight in the New York State Senate has been resolved. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's litmus test for the new Senate Leadership Conference. And with a new legislative session about to begin in the new year, lawmakers may have to take another look at the tax cap. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo, who has maintained that he has stayed out of the Senate leadership fight, is now endorsing a newly formed coalition of Senate Republicans and five Democrats, but with some conditions. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo made his first public comments about the new Senate leadership coalition, and he offered conditional support for the shared leadership plan between all of the chamber's Republican members, along with five Democrats. In an op-ed piece written for publication in the Albany Times-Union, Cuomo said when the Democrats were in power in the Senate from 2009 through 2010, they squandered the opportunity and failed to pass any meaningful reform. Wrote Cuomo, "The dysfunction was legendary." When asked about the piece, the governor didn't back down.
It's almost inarguable, as close to inarguable as any premise is in this building, that that was not a good period of government. That label of dysfunction, all the shenanigans that went on, it was not a good period.
And Cuomo says the Senate Republicans, when they've led the Senate in recent decades, also missed opportunities to act on progressive items on the governor's agenda, though he reserved his harshest language for the Democrats. Most of the Senate Democrats are left out of the new governing coalition. Only the five who make up the breakaway Independent Democratic Conference will be part of the Senate leadership. The head of the IDC, Senator Jeff Klein, and the leader of the Senate Republicans, Dean Skelos, will share the office of temporary president of the Senate on a rotating basis. Cuomo says it's too early to tell yet whether the Senate can actually function under that arrangement.
Obviously, I want what the people of the state want, which is a government body that operates, that is, conducts itself professionally. We've seen the alternative, and it was terrible. So does this accomplish that? I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows. I don't know that they know.
The governor has a litmus test of 10 issues that he says he wants senators to support. They include raising the minimum wage, enacting campaign finance reform, further decriminalizing public possession of marijuana, expanding casino gambling, continuing the property tax cap, and steps to combat climate change. He says the majority of New Yorkers also support that agenda, and he'll ultimately judge the Senate on their performance on those policies.
Did the minimum wage go up or did it not? Did you pass campaign finance or did you not? And if you didn't pass campaign finance, then I think you failed the people of the state. If you don't raise the minimum wage, I think you failed the people of the state.
A spokesman for the Senate Democrats points out that the Democratic Conference has consistently backed much of that progressive agenda that Cuomo listed. Spokesman Mike Murphy says it was Republicans who blocked much of that legislation. Two Senate races are yet to be decided. The counting of absentee and affidavit ballots are being challenged in court in a process that could continue for several more weeks. Democrats who are favored to win in the races accuse the Republicans of delay tactics. In 2010, when there were lengthy ballot challenges after elections, Cuomo urged the state's chief judge to expedite court action in order to have the races decided by the end of the year. This time, Cuomo says he's seen no evidence of stalling, and he does not plan to urge the high court to get involved. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, all a flutter this week at the state capitol about who's going to lead in the state Senate. And the coalition has been formed. They're calling it Sklinos because of Jeff Klein and Dean Skelos on opposite parties sharing some of the leadership with this coalition. And on Thursday, as we speak, the governor has written a commentary in the Albany Times Union in which he says, we'll see over time whether this coalition will succeed, but I'm going to go specifically for 10 issues I want. And they include things like the tax cap, hike in the minimum wage, and reform of the stop and frisk laws in New York City. What do you make of the governor's move, Alan?
Well, he's strategically a brilliant politician. We've all known from the very beginning he wanted to deal with the Republicans, and the Republicans were on their way out. They were going to lose. The Democrats had elected enough Democrats so that in this blue state, the Democrats would prevail if they didn't blow it again like they did the last time. Not only that, but Klein and his cohorts, who some people think sold out a long time ago for a couple of committee chairmanships and the rest, are now joined by one of the guys that they found, I think, part of the reprehensible Senate Democratic leadership in the old days, Malcolm Smith, which is really unbelievable. Now, we know Cuomo was for the Republicans maintaining control. We know that he didn't veto the famous bill that he campaigned on, that he would not sign any reapportionment that was not done by an outside group. So he let Skelos do it, and Skelos still lost. So now this is a Rube Goldberg patchwork way of doing this whole thing, which is it keeps Skelos in power, but it also puts into power Klein, the errant Democrat, and his group of four others who are now going to be in control of the Senate. The big question, of course, is whether or not the Senate Democrats go along with him when he proposes some of the progressive things that they certainly would have proposed and passed themselves. They may say things like, oh, it's not enough and we're not going to vote for it. It has to be better than that. And so there's always the amazing Speaker of the Senate, Sheldon Silver, who is now going to have to say, okay, we can't just pass one house bills which do all of this. Now we got to live with the reality that some of this stuff is going to happen. Well, anyway, when it's all added up, as they used to say in Cinderella, bippity boppity boo, we really don't know how it's all going to come out. But it is, for a political scientist, for people like who like state government, as well as for people who are looking on about to retch, one of the most interesting times we have ever seen here in state politics.
Equally interesting, a poll out this week by Siena College, the Siena Research Institute, Alan, that finds that of New Yorkers who give the governor a 72% approval rating in New York, 49% say he shouldn't run for president in 2016.
Well, they like him. They like the fact that he's a tough guy, that he's here, that he's doing what he has to do in order to clean up Albany. Now, whether he has cleaned up Albany is anybody's impression, but it doesn't matter since 72% of the people think he has. Well, if you got a good guy doing a good job according to your precepts, then do you really want him to go off in search of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, especially when you have a different candidate who you like even more, who beats him in the polls consistently, and that is Hillary Clinton. So you could have a Clinton-esque person who has trained for the presidency, who's been the first lady, who's been the secretary of state, who has the ability to, hit the ground running because she knows all of the world leaders and she knows all of the problems. Or you have Andrew Cuomo, who is very good at inside, tough guy, beat him up, outthink him state politics.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With another legislative session about to get underway in New York, lawmakers may have to take another look at the tax cap. New data shows about 25% of local governments have indicated that they may override the property tax cap in 2013, up from 19% at the same time last year. More from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
The cap, enacted 2 years ago, restricts hikes in the property tax levy to 2% annually or the rate of inflation, whichever is lower. New York State United Teachers Union was one of the first groups to oppose the tax cap when the idea was first floated. NYSET spokesman Carl Korn.
NYSET opposed the tax cap not because we don't believe in tax relief. Certainly our members and other New Yorkers pay school property taxes know very well that costs have been rising over the years. But the tax cap is a red herring. It doesn't do anything to help you if you already feel that your property taxes are too high or if you are having difficulty paying your property taxes. All it means is your taxes will continue to go up 2 or 3% a year.
The cap comes with what some call an escape clause. For example, a town board can adopt a local law giving itself authority to override the cap. Fact-finding by the Gannett News Service's Albany Bureau revealed that 58%, about 1,575 taxing entities in New York, which includes fire districts and libraries, had filed their cap plans with the state comptroller's office as of Thursday. Of those, 387 planned an override because their budgets are strained. Some counties, towns, and villages override the cap as a precaution to ensure they are not penalized if they accidentally exceed their tax limit. NYSET's Carl Korn says a much better solution is a circuit breaker,
which looks at each homeowner's overall tax bill. And in the same way that a circuit breaker in your home protects you from an overload, a circuit breaker protects you from a property tax overload. Once your tax bill crosses a certain threshold, you would get real tax relief.
Will the 2% property tax cap hold? Assemblyman Jim Tedisco thinks it's time for government to take some of the financial burdens off of local municipalities.
And it starts with Medicaid reform to take that 25% burden over the next 5 years that local municipalities have to pay in New York State. And then it goes to pension reform to help those local municipalities with some of the pension costs, and so on and so forth. The circuit breaker, I think it only makes sense if we have a progressive tax system to begin with, that we should have a progressive property tax cap.
Albany legislators will be back in the Capitol January 3rd. Observers believe a tax cap discussion is inevitable. Ron Deutsch, executive director of New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness, agrees the governor may need to reassess his position on the cap.
If the governor is going to insist that we maintain this property tax cap without any changes, then he's going to have to realize that we need to increase funding for cities, towns, and villages so that they can continue to meet their commitments because they have rising costs that the governor doesn't seem to want to address.
Governor Cuomo was in Washington, D.C., and not available for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Two conservation groups have resubmitted court papers in an attempt to obtain documents that they say prove state agencies improperly communicated with developers before approving the largest development project in the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Protect the Adirondacks and the Sierra Club refiled their motion for discovery regarding communications and documents exchanged during the Adirondack Park Agency's consideration of the Adirondack Club and Resort project in Tupper Lake. The state agency approved the project in January. The groups had filed a discovery motion with the appellate division of the state Supreme Court, but it was sent back to a lower court. The motion is being refiled in state Supreme Court in Albany County this week. Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer says it's largely a procedural move necessary to forward their case.
We believe that there is significant evidence that there was ex parte communications between the leadership of the Adirondack Park Agency and some state officials and the applicant in the 6,000-acre Adirondack Club and Resort project that the APA approved back in January. We've been given some evidence through Freedom of Information requests. We've submitted other Freedom of Information requests that the Adirondack Park Agency has denied. And in those denials, they told us that they have a number of memoranda that they believe are shielded and they are not required to turn over. So we went to court to try and get this information, and we're looking to really solidify our case.
Protect the Adirondacks and the Sierra Club also filed a new lawsuit challenging the APA's denial of Freedom of Information requested documents. John Caffrey, the attorney for Protect and the Sierra Club, says there are some similarities between the two suits.
The legal standards for what documents you can obtain in discovery are somewhat different from the standards of what's releasable in the Freedom of Information law. However, there's also some overlap because the excuses that APA gave for not releasing the documents under the Freedom of Information law are the same ones they're giving for opposing the discovery motion. So there is some commonality in the legal issues. At the same time, they do involve pretty much the same set of documents we're seeking. We would like to get them one way or the other.
Supporters of the Adirondack Club and Resort Project see the moves by Protect and the Sierra Club as an effort to derail the development. But Village of Tupper Lake Mayor Paul Maroon doesn't think the two groups have a solid case.
I think after 8 or 9 years of decision-making process through an administrative agency that has belabored this point beyond belief, they should drop the issue. Nobody tried to do anything that was wrong. The agency made a decision, and these people, they're really off base in this suit. And what it's going to do is just slow down the process. It's going to hold back the developers from selling land. It's going to hold back the community of Tupper Lake and the region of the North Country from moving ahead.
Protect the Adirondacks and the Sierra Club expect a decision on whether they can pursue discovery by the end of the year or early in the new year.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Department of Environmental Conservation appears to be nearing the end of its 4-year hydrofracking review. If the DEC gives an okay to the controversial drilling technique, final regulations are expected in early 2013. As the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, the DEC recently released some regulations that would cover the natural gas industry in New York.
The new rules cover large withdrawals from the state's public water sources and take effect in April 2013. These are the state's first permitting requirements for many large water users and were mandated by a water withdrawal bill passed last year by the state legislature. For some observers, this is the first test of claims that New York's hydrofracking regulations will be the toughest in the country. And according to Hammondsport lawyer Rachel Treichler, the DEC is failing that test.
I'm one of the people that thinks that water is far more valuable than gas. Why would we give this valuable resource to the gas industry?
Treichler says that since New York won't have permitting fees or carry out a cumulative analysis of fracking's impact on water supplies, its regulations are weaker than ones that already exist. Much of the state's water can be found in three places: the Susquehanna River Basin, the Delaware River Basin, and the Great Lakes Basin. All three watersheds are overseen through interstate compacts or agreements. Drillers in Pennsylvania already withdraw water under the Susquehanna River Basin Commission's stricter rules. The Delaware River Basin Commission is still considering its own regulations. So Treichler, who writes the New York Water Law blog, wonders why the DEC is writing regulations weaker than the ones now covering the Susquehanna River Basin.
I think that they are a gift because the permitting requirements are quite weak. They offer a number of loopholes that I think the gas industry can take advantage of.
In an emailed response, DEC spokesperson Lisa King said it was the 2011 water withdrawal legislation that created the differences between the DEC's rules and those used by other regulators. When the new rules were released, New York DEC Commissioner Joe Martens said they would bring the state in line with what's known as the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Compact. The compact is a legally binding agreement between 8 states in the Great Lakes region. Created in 2005, its goal is to protect the region's water supply. New York's part of the basin stretches south of the Finger Lakes and includes much of the water supply north and west of the gas-rich Marcellus Shale. Jared Teutsch of the Chicago-based Alliance for the Great Lakes says New York hasn't violated the compact, but they're not exactly setting an example for other states.
It's just disappointing to see that New York isn't kind of rising to the level of, let's say, Minnesota, who's taken the high end of, you know, regulatory review on water withdrawals.
Teutsch's group proposed changes when the rules were first put out for comment. Those proposals were ignored. Teutsch says that even though the Great Lakes seems like an endless supply of water, only 1% of it is renewed every year.
So really what we've got and what we're sitting on is this vast, you know, leftover treasure from the glaciers. And, you know, we're slowly tapping into it and, you know, we're slowly whittling away at it.
Teutsch says he hopes that in the future, the DEC will be open to adjusting its regulations. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1249. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.